Yes, folks, you're listening to Now We're Talking on CITR 101.9 FM. Chris, this must be surreal for you. We've been hanging out for the last 2 hours having a conversation, and now we've stepped into the radio station, and now I'm radio host Jeff saying hello to the audience. Well, Chris Schultz is with me today, and I'm stoked about it. Chris is a good friend of mine. We haven't seen each other in a long time, and it's interesting when we haven't seen each other in such a long time to catch up both off and on the air. But of course, the goal is for us to basically keep having the awesome conversation we're having. Chris is, I don't know if you'll cringe at this or not, but you are a virtuosic guitar player. Does that make you cringe when you hear the use of the word virtuosic?
Oh, that's a good question.
Are you okay with it?
A part of my spine tingles a bit.
A little bit, a good tingle or a bad tingle?
A little bit of both.
Yeah, a little bit of both, both tingling.
The 15-year-old me is happy to hear it.
Okay, you're right, exactly. Yeah. That's still in there somewhere.
42-year-old is thinking.
Unsure.
It's all about the feel.
Yeah. Well, I'm comfortable using it because I've played with you, and of course, I've kept abreast of the music you've been creating, and I'm quite comfortable with that description, and a composer of music as well. And, you know, for the show, having people come in, I'm looking for, at this point, interesting artists and having great conversations with Chris's. The journey that you've been on is really interesting to me, you know, and when I've thought about like the conversation we're going to have, I'm so conscious of how time will elapse very quickly. We've got at least a couple of your songs that we're going to make sure we play so that people can hear what it is that we're talking about. But I guess I just kind of want to dive in so that it doesn't get glossed over in this conversation. What took you from a place of being a seasoned guitar player, because I know you've taught guitar and played guitar for over 25 years. And Chris is a relatively young man, by the way. That makes him sound like he's in his 50s or something. He's like early 40s. How old are you, 40?
42.
42.
Just turned 42.
So since you're a teenager, you're teaching guitar, playing with bands. And what happened for you in the last few years that led you to this place where you now have an album that you've released? I know you toured it across the country last year. Yeah. You're on the verge of another tour. Mm-hmm. You're thinking about the next album.
Yeah.
How did you get to this place artistically of basically having the balls to do this? How did this happen?
Audacity.
Tell me how to do it, Chris. That's what this show is for. Tell me how it works.
Step one is every part of your life has to fall apart.
Okay, right. So everything must be broken down.
You've got to start from zero.
Okay, and that's what happened, is it?
So, it was a bit of a rewiring, so to speak. I'd hit a point in my life where I really assessed what I was all about.
Yeah.
What I stood for as a musician, as a person. I did some serious, you know, cliche soul searching, as they would say.
Cliche and, for a reason, right?
Yeah. But over time I found the voice that needed to get out musically, and you know, it led me back to the acoustic guitar, which is where I started.
Right.
And you know, I just, you know, being a composer and just using a guitar without any vocals and trying to get all these different flavors and colors and emotions out was a real challenge. I didn't have the technique or the capacity to do it. So I think I knew I had a lot of work to do. And so I just sat down and started writing. And every time I would write something I couldn't play, then I also had to practice. So it was kind of a two-part.
To get the chops up to what you're hearing in your head.
Yeah, and it was neat to only practice my music, you know, for all those years of practicing other people's tunes. And even though I'd written, I'd never been in that situation where I couldn't play my own music.
Right.
And I wondered if I'd ever get it together. It was a really brutal process, ugly for many years, actually. And I was hoping one day I would get it to the point where I could just hear the music and not the technique behind it.
Right.
So, you know, I'm still working on that, but it's at a point where I can emote without analyzing or without considering what my hands are doing as much.
Yeah. I was looking through some of what you wrote on your website and describing your process and a few things you talked about. Realizing that you weren't able to play what you heard in your head and realizing the work had to be put in to get there, which is so interesting, I think, to anybody. And for me as a fellow musician, but like when you know somebody as very skilled and capable, I've always been intrigued by artists, I guess even just people trying to improve as people, but in this case, being a player, a musician, who are talking about being nowhere near where they yet want to be, mm-hmm. when in my mind, they're already like one of the best I've ever seen or something, because I guess in my mind, it's like there's a finish line they've crossed that they can just sit back and relax now, as opposed to embracing the idea.
Yeah, I look at other people,
as a person, you want to grow, right?
I see the same thing. I wonder, how much better can so-and-so get?
Yeah.
You know, and if you sit down and talk with them, they think they're just getting started.
Yeah, exactly.
So I get it from a you know, a looking in point of view too.
Yeah, and wanting to grow too. I think it exposes the idea. I mean, maybe I'm projecting here, but just the idea of sometimes it feels like maybe there's relief in life in knowing I'm just going to cross that finish line and then I'll kick back and I can just enjoy life rather than it being such hard work.
Yeah.
But like maybe the breakthrough is realizing that the work is the way.
You nailed it. I mean, I didn't, the first 2 years that I sort of rebuilt how I was approaching my art, I kept thinking at some point I'll take a break and I'll want that. And the break never came. And over that time period, I learned that I really was enjoying the work and at, you know, these things that I used to do that were eating up time just seemed so distant now. I couldn't even imagine going back and doing them. And so for me, that's been the greatest gift, is actually rediscovering the passion that I started with.
Yes.
You know, when you're a kid and you don't have any expectations and you just pick up an instrument and you just play for the love of it. And
that's the other thing I wanted to mention earlier when I was saying I was reading through some of what you talked about on your website. You talked about being a kid and how it feels like it's come full circle.
Yeah.
You've had all these experiences in your 20s and 30s, but somehow it's come full circle in the sense that it sounds like you're accessing whatever that like passion was.
Yeah.
That for me, that's exciting to hear. And I really focused in on that because as a guitar teacher recently, when I'm helping students, I'm thinking about what was it like for me when I learned?
Yeah.
And that causes me to reflect on like, wow, I really did the work when I was a kid. Like you're so used to, I don't know, getting better at things when you get older. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I did the heavy lifting when I was a teenager at a time in my life when I don't know anything.
Well,
why did I do that? You did that because you were loving it.
Yeah.
And there was this clip that I showed one of my students from the movie Nowhere Boy, which is about John Lennon. Mm-hmm. And it's this time lapse thing, which just depicts what does it look like. And I posted it on my Instagram because it's such a cool clip. I'll show it to you after. Okay. But it's just this clip that depicts what does it look like when they tentatively are learning the chords, but they just play. And then they start flying, man.
Yeah.
And they're playing the song like they hear it in their head.
Yes.
And it just really got me thinking about that passion when you're young. And for me, I feel like I'm in a place that you were in that you managed to move through,
which is
feeling cynical, feeling jaded, feeling stuck, not sure what to do with it, just trying, getting comfortable with it. I don't want to do that. And so I look at you and I'm intrigued, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, I appreciate all of that, what you're saying. And I can relate to it on so many levels. I've been through the war of creativity.
The war of art,
I've celebrated the victories. I've been on either side of it. And in looking back, I think, you know, there came a time where I became so hyper aware of the industry of art, all art, and, you know, what your expectations were to move forward. And I guess I'd put the work in and now I need to, you know, now I just get to coast or what it was. But
will come into your life.
Yeah.
And make it happen for
you. Sure, yeah. Waiting for someone to come along and recognize what you're doing. And then I started thinking back to when I was 15, 16, 17, and I didn't have those expectations. I just put the work in.
Yeah.
And I did it because I loved it.
Because every stage you got to was so exhilarating.
Yeah.
Now I can do this. Now I can do this.
And, you know, as a guitar teacher, I used to envy my students at a point where they were learning for the first time and I could see that thrill.
Yeah.
And at that time I thought, man, like I really wish I still had that. I definitely found it again.
Did you in that moment when you're saying, oh man, I wish, I'm looking at what they're experiencing, I wish I could have that again. Did you still hold out some hope that you would, or were you beginning to feel like maybe it's over for me? I just need to accept that.
I think I thought it was pretty much going to just be a dry ride from there, you know.
The dream was over.
I was more into golfing at one point in time.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. So you're trying to find other ways to experience happiness and think, you know what, I gave this a shot.
Yeah.
It's fine,
sure.
But maybe I need to move beyond some of these adolescent fantasies of what it could be. It's just not going to happen for me.
Do you know, I teach at Electronic Arts, and I work with some really great people there. And there's a common connection we have. I talked to them about what got them into the programming, and because now they're working for one of the biggest companies in the video game world, and they love their jobs generally, but they sometimes struggle with that passion part of it. Maybe they want to build their own game or an app or something, and we talk about that, I said, when you were 15 and 16, you know, do you remember just programming for hours? Not, you know, if you'd seen yourself in the future working for Electronic Arts, you would have thought, that's it.
Yeah.
Life has been made.
I made it.
You know, and it's funny to look at it that way when you're, you know, you look successful on paper.
Yeah.
And you realize you don't have that same fulfillment that you had when nothing mattered.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, it's, yeah. Yeah, I don't want to sound like I've got it figured out, but I'm conscious of that, and I'm trying to be really grateful for my playing and every moment I spend with it, and not just do it.
So, what did it feel like to release the album While the City Sleeps? That was released a year ago, right?
Yeah.
What did it feel like, with everything we just said in mind, to know that you wrote this, recorded it, not just did all that, but when you released it and shared it with people, that it mattered to people? What did that feel like?
An incredible feeling, actually. I was really proud of the album. I knew what had gone into making it, and I, you know, every single step of that album, the artwork, the concept of it, you know, I was putting the time in, and I was enjoying it. It was a grind at times. Yeah. There were many times I wanted to quit, but I stuck at it. But then to release it and have people tell me that the music means something to them was, you know, was a whole bonus level that I didn't even think about.
You weren't counting on that?
Not at all. I didn't really see where it would fit in people's lives. I didn't even really think about it. It was something I felt like I had to do. It was a very artistically driven project, and you know, it still blows me away. I have people sending me messages that it's the only CD in their car. That's how they stop from, you know, trying to run the next guy off the road. It's it's a bit of a therapy CD. I think it's
deeply matters to people. It's really not just does, yeah. I release music and people are like, yeah, it's not bad, kid. Like, actually a situation where you get the impression, wow, these people are kind of conveying to me that this is something that's impacted them.
It's unreal.
It is unreal.
Yeah, I'd never.
It's incredibly humbling, eh?
Oh my God, I mean, to say
nothing of validating, and not validating from the ego standpoint, but just validating from that standpoint of all, for all the moments.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't want to speak for you, but I imagine this is universal for all those moments where you say, sometimes it's a grind. What is this for? Where is this going? Is this going to work? But you stuck it out, and then it mattered to somebody. It's like, it's a conversation, right? Like, you know, you have a good conversation with somebody, it's rewarding. You express an idea through music, they listen to it. It's that same good feeling of, I'm glad that connection occurred, maybe.
It really is. It's, yeah, and you said humbling. I can't think of a better word. It's not something that, you know, I get off on in an ego sense. I don't think my music is that important that, you know, it needs to be there for people. That they're taking the time to listen to it and reach out to me is unreal.
Yes.
You know?
And you get to go on the road, man.
Yeah.
And not just go on the road, but really play all across the country and meet some of these people for the first time, or maybe see some people again. So as you now go back on the road, are you looking forward to making some of those connections in person again?
Yeah, I do, actually. I really enjoy the I've been in bands my whole life. I love it. I'm still in two full-time bands, but when I'm a solo act, I can really gauge the feeling in the room.
Yeah.
And what I'm feeling, what the audience is feeling, the pace. I try not to plan anything. It's you know, I feel like I have the repertoire of my own songs that I can kind of pull the ones I feel like playing at the right moment.
Right.
And I hate the thought that I would have some kind of a contrived speech or, you know, something, you know, little joke that I say every night.
Yeah, something that's premeditated.
I'm not very professional that way. I sometimes ramble and, you know, listen to feedback after. You know, you could have probably stopped talking after 20 minutes. But
does that happen sometimes where you lose track of time?
I totally do. I mean, I can explain a song for 20 minutes. You know, and
people are like, Chris, we do need to close the doors to the venue and sweep up at some point.
Yeah, it's something to work on.
But maybe a mistake worth making, because maybe it's not as concise as it could be. But I'm thinking probably more interesting, at least to me, because it's more direct and honest.
I really want an authentic experience for myself, first and foremost.
Yeah.
I don't want to just be going through the motions. And, you know, I've been fortunate with this stuff that I haven't had that yet. And I hope to continue to take care of that spirit, you know. And
I think it's such a good instinct, because it makes me think about stage fright and what causes stage fright, particularly in terms of talking to the audience. And I asked you because, knowing that you're playing instrumental music without vocalizing. Mm-hmm. It just dawned on me, oh, I wonder if that means that no singing, no talking. I don't know. And a lot of people make the choice not to talk much.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily part of what they do when they perform music. So I didn't know. But knowing you as a person, I thought, I hope he does, because I think that would be like a real asset to the presentation. And I think in terms of stage fright, what causes stage fright? I think part of it is you're trying to be something you're not.
Yeah.
I think that when you're exactly. when you're hoping to live up to what you think the image of you should be, and then you're not quite doing, that's where the fright comes in.
Sure.
And I think that if you just set all that aside and just try to just calibrate on being yourself, hopefully then that can fall to the wayside.
Yeah, there's something about having fun with the moment. It and not necessarily just fun. Like if it's a if it's a very emotionally important song to me, I'll try to go there too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna play a song that came out of an emotional place and just rip through it.
Gloss
I'm gonna
over
go
that.
There.
Yeah,
you know. But I wanna enjoy the moment, even those moments, even if I'm like, there's been times where I've been playing a song that meant so much to me that, of course, I'm, you know, tears are coming out as I'm playing it. And then, you know, then I'm aware that that's happening. And I go, no, just let it happen. It's fine. I want to be present.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to try to be something I'm not, like you said. And I'm not the greatest player. I'm not going to play perfect. I'm not going to, it's going to be a new experience every night. And I'm happy playing small rooms and having that interaction with people, so intimate.
Yeah.
Right? I don't really have any desire for it to go any further than that, or any expectations that it will. If I've got one person who's listening, I'm happy to play.
Yeah, you said that to me before, how you wouldn't necessarily want the room to be larger than 100 at the most. Mm-hmm. And we talked about the intimacy, and I'm imagining it's because you want to gauge the temperature of the room. You want to know what's happening in the room, and you want it to be symbiotic and to work both ways.
Yeah.
And so when it's that a number of people or less, I know from my own experience, you can more tap into the rhythm of what's happening in the room.
You really can, and it's an experience.
Yeah.
I like a room with vibe. I want people to feel like they're being transported. I want to transport.
Yeah.
You know, I played a house concert up at Whistler a couple weekends ago. I think there were only 10 people there, but we all went somewhere.
Yeah.
And that little show will go down in my memory as being one of the best ever.
You know, especially with your music, I have to say, man, it's like what you do is intriguing. And with all this in mind, we should play one of your songs quickly, because I'm just imagining people are like, cut to the chase. You've said he's a musician. You're giving us all this context. Don't even know what he does.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking we got to share this quickly before they get so angry that they throw the radio out the window or something. But I'm not trying to put you up on a pedestal or inflate your ego or come across as insincere anyway. I mean this. It's like, I remember one time you and I did a gig. There's a couple of times, but I think you and I did a gig once with a bandmate from Side One, and we were at my place after the gig.
I remember that.
And I was like, why don't you play us one of these or something?
Right, yeah.
And her and I both were just like, holy, what do we got here, man? Because there's such an artistry to the musicianship where, what is the style of playing? Because we talked about how this style of music has, it's called, it's finger style.
Yeah, that's a funny name for it.
It's a wrong word for a genre, because it can be any type of music. But what we're talking about here is a very ornate style of instrumental finger style guitar playing that involves percussive elements. How am I doing so far? I'm
great.
On the right track.
Yeah, the idea is that I'm using my fingers only on an acoustic guitar. I'm adding percussion where I see fit if I want to pronounce the beat a bit more, if I want the kick and the snare, so that, because that makes a big difference to how you feel the song.
Yeah.
And you know, some people hear it and they go, why don't you just get a drummer? But it's great to have an instrument like the acoustic guitar where you can create all these textures with one, you know, one instrument. And
the one man band.
Yeah. And it's not a gimmick for me. It's not something, I don't think, just because I'm playing a certain technique that, you know, whoa, look at me. It really, hopefully, is in service of the melody and the harmony,
yes,
or the rhythm. I mean, I'm a drummer too, so sometimes I will tend to lean more on the rhythm than the other aspects, you know. But stylistically, I'm really coming from a heavy metal background mixed with my passion for blues and flamenco and funk. And I think those primary ingredients show up at different times in the songs.
Yeah.
But I just love all music. So, you know, I'm not going to edit a song to make it fit a certain genre.
Yeah.
And so that album's all over the place. I mean, one song is clearly coming from a blues background, and the next one will be very metal influenced, and that's not by design. That's not like I'm going to write a metal song.
Yeah,
you know,
it's just the different parts of you.
Yeah, I let the song go where it wants to go, and I don't try to strangle it into being something.
How does that go over for the live performance, as well as when people give you feedback for the record? Because I can appreciate from my own experience, you know, thinking it sort of mechanically in terms of product, like what's the thing? The thing's got to be the thing to access the market segment. But from an artistic standpoint, it sounds much more appealing to be like, oh, there's a few different styles of music, but it's all me.
Yeah.
You know, like what if I know how I feel about that. You know how you feel about it, but how has your audience responded to that variety?
Well, with the acoustic guitar, it's great because it sort of takes out the edges on all the styles. Like mm-hmm. you can't really tell what genre it is because it comes out sounding somehow folk.
Right.
So it takes a really discernible ear to hear those influences I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And I didn't know I was using those until after the fact. It's when you're sitting there trying to figure out a bio and people ask you that question.
Like, you look at it with different goggles.
Yeah. And you want to sort of frame it so people can get a point of reference, and, you know, different musical communities have been, more inclined to embrace what I'm doing than others based on, I think, that influence coming through.
Yeah.
But I think the guitar itself is just allowing for a continuity between the genres that I'm applying.
Hmm.
You know, if I did it
it's
on
like
an
a
electric.
Through line.
Yeah, exactly. That's the common, and it's that one guitar that I play that I love so much. And it just, I can't do that sound on other guitars necessarily. It won't, like, you know, I could pick up any guitar and play it, but that guitar is just voiced for those songs, and it really, you know, I don't know what I'd do if I lost it.
Right. How long have you had this guitar?
I guess about 3 years now.
It was that kind of a breakthrough moment, like, oh boy, this is the guitar.
There is a video on YouTube where I sometimes go into Blue Dog Guitars in North Vancouver, and they're really good friends of mine. I love them, Jen and Paul.
That's where you're doing your show, right?
Yeah.
We'll talk about that more later, exactly. But that's coming up soon.
And they said, hey, can you demo some of these guitars, you know, and I'll do a little video of my song. And
okay.
That particular guitar I'm talking about was this last little guitar I played one day. It was the cheapest of all of them, the Little Runt. And I picked it up and never played it before. And I fell in love with it during that moment. Wow. And so it's kind of neat that there's a video of it actually happening. And Jen at the end of it said, wow, you just bonded with that guitar. And then it took me a year to get that guitar because, you know, I'm sponsored by that company now, but I had to track them down and say, I want that guitar. And they said, well, you can't have it. It's a prototype. And there's a long list of reasons why, you know, you can't have it. And I said, well, I have to.
Here's my short list of reasons why I must have it.
Yeah. So I love that little thing.
It's an interesting relationship with the guitar. I'm sure you've played so many guitars, had so many guitars. And what an interesting, unspeakable thing when it's just one that shouldn't be the best guitar because it's not the most expensive. As you say, it's the runt of the litter.
Yeah.
But something occurs.
Something about that one.
Which you would know because you've handled a lot of guitars, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
I've been spoiled.
So you protect it when you travel?
Not really, actually. That's the thing with that one. It's it gets beat up pretty bad, but I'm okay with that. I know nothing lasts forever.
As long as it's not crushed.
Yeah.
Or even if it's okay if it doesn't last forever.
Yeah. It's okay. I will ride that guitar as long as
it's supposed to.
One of us is going to.
Yeah. Maybe you'll be like Willie Nelson, man. Maybe you'll play it until it falls apart like 40 or 50 years from now.
Let's hope.
Yeah. Let's play one of your songs, man. I feel like we've suitably built up the suspense. We've got three tracks to choose from that I have available. Bearing in mind everything we just said, and I'm thinking about what you were talking about, the variety of genres and the fullness of the instrument with some of the percussive elements. I'm sure it applies to all of them. But what are you feeling right now? What do you want to share with the people?
I think I like to have people hear A Smile from India.
Great.
Because it doesn't just cover the genres of guitar, but also covers cultural language of music, which I'm a huge fan of Indian music, and I'm a hack at it. It's not like I've ever taken a raga lesson or anything, but I do listen to Indian music intently, and that song was highly inspired by Indian culture and some experiences that my girlfriend had been going through while visiting over there, and the music that I've accumulated over the years. So I would love for people to hear that. It kind of puts it all together.
Cool. And I like that we'll talk more about your songwriting after we hear this song too. And I know we've spoken before about how all of these songs are an expression of something you're feeling, you know, and the titles as well. It all goes to a place.
Sure.
Folks, you're listening to Now We're Talking on CITR 101.9 FM, or you're listening to the podcast, Now We're Talking. I'm Jeff Bryant. Chris Schultz is here in studio. We're going to play one of his songs right now, A Smile from India.
Thank you.
folks, you're listening to Now We're Talking on CITR 101.9 FM. That's A Smile from India, a composition written and performed by Chris Schultz, who's with me in studio now. And Chris, while that was playing, again, we have great conversations off the air. We've got to put them on the air, too. You're just saying, well, we should just left it on. We could have done it all. But no, I pressed the right button so that wouldn't happen, so people wouldn't be confused sonically. Yeah, we were just talking about the relationship you forged with the producer of this album, Antoine Dufour, is that his name?
Antoine Dufour, right.
So he's a world-class player in his own right. Yeah, you knew who this guy was.
Big time.
So when it was time for you to record the album, you were looking around studios in Vancouver, not really, you know, maybe finding the studios and the microphones, all that mechanical stuff, but you were trying to find the person who would leverage the music, right?
Yeah, I heard this guitar taking up the whole mix in a real three-dimensional way. I wanted this big, rich, fat sound and all to be done on one take. I didn't want overdubs to come into play. So I feel like the way the acoustic guitar has been recorded a lot has been more for a support role.
Mm-hmm.
And I was picking up on that vibe when I would talk to different studios and try to explain my vision for the songs. And I'm not even sure if people had heard this type of guitar.
Yeah.
So then I thought about if I could go anywhere in the world, you know, where would I go? And Antoine was the first guy. And
that's amazing, man. Yeah, you start with the idea. Just for reference, I'm going to start with the dream situation. Then I'll work my way down.
Yeah.
And then you just did that.
Yeah. There's a bit of that trend been going on through this whole process where I just, you know, shoot for the stars and...
Might as well, eh?
Yeah. And I sent him an email. I, you know, I had to track him down through his website and I didn't expect a response. You know, and I was moving on with no plans to record. And I get this, you know, one line, sure, let's do it response. And I
just matter of fact,
I learned how to do a cartwheel and I,
so you could celebrate effectively.
Oh, I was so excited. Yeah. I mean,
like, honey, show me how to do a cartwheel. I need to celebrate this victory.
I could have died then and been happy. You know, it was just what a great
death by jubilant cartwheel.
Yes. And, you know, it was very, I was very fortunate to get to work with him, and I'm happy to be going back in June. I'll be hopping off the tour bus after our
mid-tour,
show in Montreal.
Eh? Yeah. Look at you. So you're doing this four-leg tour. You're going to stop off there. You've got some time, and you're just going to pick up where you left off with
him. Yeah, it just seemed to write itself. Like, he only had this 1 week open, and I mean, he's in Japan right now. This guy is busy. He's writing and recording. He just released an incredible new album. Please go check out everything by Antoine Dufour. You guys will be just thrilled with his music. And... you know, it just happened to line up, and I said, well, that's crazy. I'm going to be in Montreal that exact weekend. And he lives an hour northwest of there in a little town called L'Assomption, which is just a beautiful little historic Canadian town, old buildings everywhere. I just loved it there.
Something romantic about when you record an album, going to a place that affects you. You know, you hear about great albums and you hear about that experience. It's so much more romantic than just, oh yeah, we laid down some bed tracks down the street. That's actually an experience.
Yeah, it really was.
Did that influence the records?
It really did. I mean, every day I was staying at this old bed and breakfast. It used to be the post office. I mean, I think the building is from the early 1900s.
Wow.
Definitely haunted. the coolest couple... You know, I'd wake up, I'd be the only guest there, and they would serve me this meal that could feed 20 people, just endless cheese. I just, every time I would try to get up.
They love cheese out there,
oh
do
my
they?
God. And different types of cheese. And
right.
Giving me a story behind each one. And, you know, I was late for the studio every day because of this breakfast. I actually had to ask if we could just make it earlier. And I felt bad because it was the most beautiful meal I'd ever had.
Wow.
And Antoine was laughing. You know, and then I'd walk down the little one lane road. I mean, it's a town, but it has one strip.
Sure.
And they have all this really unique artwork there. I don't remember the name of the artist, but these metal structures kind of look like the crazy balloon dudes out on top of the car lot, you know, but they're made out of metal.
Okay.
And they're all over town. So I started trying to get a picture of all of them, and they're hilarious. I mean, some of them, I can't even say what some of them had on air, but it was funny. What an artistic little place.
Like phalluses, I'm
yes.
thinking?
Oh, yeah.
Controversial like phalluses?
Pterodactyl. Crazy bird thing with this giant
balls and penises and balls
and little kids with their families taking pictures of it. It was really funny. Like, I love Quebec, you know. It's just don't ever change.
Keep the cheese flowing, keep the balls flowing.
We got some
keep it all
there.
Happening.
Yeah,
that's cool, man. I'm glad you had that experience of going to a special place and having that special connection, because
so
who knows what imprint that made on the album, but it must because it puts you into a headspace, you know.
It sure did. Yeah, I greatly indebted to that town and everybody that was involved.
How cool that you get to go back to, you know, and get to replay that experience.
Yeah, it is. It's
Do you feel like you're on a trajectory of maybe doing multiple albums, or are you just taking it one at a time to see how life unfolds?
Honestly, I think after this one, I worked really hard for the second album. I'm really proud of it. And I'm not sure what's going to happen after this one. I really want to chase the muse. I do have other things I want to do that involve electric guitar.
Okay.
I do want to record a vocal album that I've written as well. So I'm just going to take it, you know, literally day by day, and also try to save some time to just enjoy life and not worry about the big picture so much. Or maybe that is the big picture.
But take it as it comes.
Yeah.
I think that's instinctively, I sign off on that. That makes sense to me.
Two of those albums would be plenty for me for now, because I can barely get, you know, there's a lot of songs there.
Yeah, actually, that's what I was thinking, I guess, when I asked the question, is that you've already got the material to be playing across the country, and now this is going to double that, I presume, or roughly double the amount of material. So it's a good feeling, I think, to be prolific, but it's also nice to play those songs, and now that you've created them, to focus on sharing them too and exploring other endeavors.
We're also in an era where music comes with a video no matter what.
Yeah, and that's true, man.
I really like all the artistic sides of this. I enjoy the artwork. I enjoy the videos. I had a lot of fun making a few videos, and I'd love to make one for every song. I think
that's a good idea, man. Yeah. That's been on my mind a lot when I think about my own efforts. I was kind of thinking about this a few years ago when I was in my original band, and sort of at the end of our career when we were working on the second album, is I thought, you know what, in my mind, it's such a given that I want to do 10 songs and have an album, and that's fine. But I almost feel like if they're not each serviced by a video in this day and age, they're going to get lost in the shuffle. Yeah. In which case, what was the point? It almost, this is a bit much maybe for some, but it almost feels like, why bother to write and record a song if it's not going to be accompanied by a video? Mm-hmm. Because the reality is, that's how things are largely consumed. Yeah. Of course, we have the experience of listening to music straight up, you know. But for me, if like somebody's sharing something with me, I'm kind of expecting a video link, not a SoundCloud link.
Yeah.
So for me, I haven't mentioned this to you, but recently, after about 5 years of me kind of half finishing songs, just not quite seeing it through, I wrote a song, I finished a song, it was done, and I thought, what good is this if I don't make a video? But I didn't want to get bogged down in spending the rest of the year waiting for conditions to be right and get the right team and the money involved and apply for the grant, all that stuff that's just, in my opinion, for me, designed to delay.
Yeah.
And ultimately, by the time you get it, you're not into it anymore.
Yeah.
So I thought, screw it, I'm going to figure out how to make a video that pleases me with my phone. And then it will be done.
Yeah.
So I did some tests, I shot some stuff, and ultimately I created something which I could see how it could continue to improve. But I thought, you know what? This will be a great feeling for me to say, it's done.
Yeah.
And to press that button where I put it on the internet, I expect very few people to even notice, but I know it's done. And maybe it will improve later, or maybe I can just move on to the next song and start to get some momentum here.
Yeah.
So anyway, all of that to say, I totally agree with that idea that if you're going to take all this time to create these beautiful pieces of music, one way or the other, if they can be serviced with a beautiful video, whether it's you performing it live, some sort of animation, or anything at all,
I think
that's beautiful.
Yeah, I like, you know, obviously when you're doing a live video, you have to consider the miking and the actual sounds. You can't be outdoors unless you want birds chirping and cars honking, but also like the cinematic element, like a huge fan of Radiohead, and you know, those videos left a mark on me as a kid, and you know, just imagery that goes along with the music and brings out another element that you might not know the artist intended to. So there's definitely that too, so I want to find a mix. And yeah, I love that idea that eventually all of the instrumental songs have their own little video. And like you, I don't really care if anybody watches them. I want that for myself.
Yeah, to know that here it is. Here's the thing that I created. It's like a time capsule of that period in my life.
Yeah.
And it's preserved through this thing that's digital that will last forever.
Do you know, John Butler from Australia, as a fantastic guitar player and singer, songwriter, you know, he has a signature song called Ocean. And I remember watching an interview with him years ago where he said every year he revisits that song and writes a new part to it or takes a part out, and it's to pay tribute to that song because that's when he found his voice as a musician.
So specifically with that song for him.
So, you know, even that, like even reimagining the songs as an electric or as a full orchestra or whatever. I mean, I love the music. It'd be neat to you know, I'll probably do none of it, but you know, right now it seems like a good idea.
Well, I like the idea of that because it feels like it's this nice combination of letting go of the song in the sense that it's not gathering dust. Mm-hmm. It's been released. It now exists as a thing, and it can be modified. Like a musician who, as you say, like Dylan comes to mind as somebody who's never playing his classics the way you know them.
Everybody loves that.
And everybody, exactly, everybody hates it, but he loves it, I guess, or it keeps it interesting
for him.
Yeah. And I like that. I like the idea. That's what I said to myself. I said, I can release this now. Could it be mixed better or mastered or this be tweaked? Yeah, but ultimately, if that's supposed to happen, it's going to be the result of it being a thing in the world rather than being a thing in my basement or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm just honestly at this point in my life, I've seen the dead end that it is to have a bunch of half-finished songs.
Yeah.
And I've seen how nice it feels to complete things. That's what I'm thinking about.
I think that, you know, nowadays, one of the things I recommend to some of the people in my life that are creating art and are hesitant to release it, I said, create a pseudonym. Release it anonymously. You know, there's so many ways you can put your art out there and you don't have to really worry about it coming back on you.
Being accountable because it's forever associated with your name or your brand or something.
I think back to when we're kids and we're just scribbling on paper and everyone tells you it's great. And then by the time you're 7 or 8, you start to find out that it's not that great. And everyone gets a little bit of a challenge to their art and their creative output.
Yes.
And some people are lucky, you know, like for me, I was in a musical family, so my art was encouraged, but that's not a talent. That I was fortunate to be surrounded by that support. And I see people that don't think they have any ability. They say they don't have a talent for it. They create the most amazing stuff and think it sucks. And, you know, if you remove that pressure for it to be considered good by your peers or by a critic or whatever, it just create the art for itself and, you know,
you're right, man.
It doesn't have to go any further than that.
You're right, man. And the proof of that is if you asked a bunch of adults right now to draw an airplane, they'd all look like they drew it when they were 8 years old.
Yeah.
Because that was approximately the age when it was no longer safe to draw.
Yeah.
And I always remember that. I think that's a perfect analogy for when we stop singing, writing, for boys, dancing, all these forms of expression, when it's no longer childlike and safe to come out and play.
Yeah.
And then you're stuck in that stage of development. Like imagine with language, if it no longer was acceptable for you to learn how to write or speak.
Yeah.
And then what you would talk like your whole life would be halting because it would be stuck in this early stage of development. Chris, I told you that this hour would fly by.
Yeah.
Now, we still have some time.
Okay.
This is me being an excellent timekeeper, saying, oh my God, we ran out of time. But it's me saying, okay, we're going to play another song right now.
Great.
So we can play the song and have a little bit more time. Now, I think what we should do is play the Orange Superhero Cartoon Horse song. Is that what you want to do?
Sure, yeah.
But I want to take a second to acknowledge the song. Gray Never Felt So Good.
Right.
Because I wanted to play it, but we don't have enough time to play it. But I want to acknowledge it because about 3 or 4 years ago, when I was first aware of the fact that you had gone to this Canadian fingerstyle competition at the Canadian Guitar Festival, where you finished in fourth place, I remember you preparing for it and then going to it and then having the experience. And I think you made a lot of great connections there.
Yeah, it was key.
That's when I was like, what is going on here? Like, I got to see a clip of this. And I saw a clip, I think, of you performing live the song Gray Never Felt So Good. And yeah, that's when I became aware of like some of the things we spoke about earlier, just like the story embedded within the song. I found that intriguing as somebody myself who's a lyricist and a singer. I'm thinking about all the words and the melody related to singing. I found that interesting. I sent you an email. I sent you an email where I just wanted to emphasize, and I looked at it today, and it was very complimentary and very sincere.
Very serious stuff.
And we had an email thread
where
we talked a little bit back and forth about it. It took me some time before I realized that I made the best typo. I've made some typos. I'm pretty precise, actually, but I've made some typos in my life. In fact, I made one today when I made a note about you coming in and just a haphazard typo that nothing could be, there's no double meaning. But it was the best typo I ever made because instead of saying Gray never felt so good, it said Gary never felt so good.
Yeah.
And when I picked up on that later, I thought this is a beautiful thing. I modify two letters.
Yeah.
And not only does it conjure up the image for me of a guy named Gary, just feels great. Yeah. He's going through life and he's had some, like we've talked about today, a lot about how life goes up and down.
Yeah.
Life is good for Gary right now. Yeah. And I thought that was hilarious. But it also conjured up for me the image of a massage therapist who's been massaging Gary for months. And it's just like, Gary, I don't know what it is about your body, but you have never felt so good to my touch.
Gary never felt so good.
And in my mind, I felt guilty about finding, because this is a very beautiful, serious piece of music, and I'm corrupting it.
It used to be.
But then I ruined it. And I even was on the verge of forming a duo with Marley Collins,
right,
where we considered calling our band Gary Never Felt So Good. So if you want to hear that song, you're going to have to hear it on your own time. But you can look that up and other songs at your web. People can just, at this point, people can Google you, Chris Schultz.
Yeah.
But they'll find on your website a link to your YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And I know you have an Instagram page as well.
I try to, you know, keep a bit of that stuff going. The website, it has all the music for free. I want people to be able to listen to it.
And yeah.
I had this vision of creating a home on the web where, you know, I could put my blogs, my music, and not really worry about the social media aspect of it, which is...
It's like a home for everything, like storefront, and it's all there. And I know that I have noticed that the commitment that's been made to putting up lots of different videos to check out whether it's you doing it live in your home or with collaboration with others. I know actually there's a video for this next song we're going to play.
Yeah.
It looks like it was shot by Alexis.
That's right. Yeah.
I noticed that. And it was we talked before about how you want to shoot it and record it in a certain way. Yeah. And he had the camera angle on the head of the guitar.
Yeah,
very cool video.
Yeah, he did a great
job. Recommend anybody listening, if they like the song, they should check out the video. I think, is that on your YouTube channel?
It is.
I saw it somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, Ferris Caballus.
Ferris Caballus is the name of this song. And thank you for pronouncing it on my behalf, because I was mortified. It looks like Latin to me. But tell me what this is about, the horse and the orange and the superhero. What's that all about?
So... you know, when I write a song, sometimes it starts with an idea, a melody, flavor, color, whatever. But this song was one that started with a riff.
Okay.
And it's the fast riff. You'll hear it pretty quick in the song. And immediately when I played it, I saw this gangly orange horse. And
okay.
I saw the whole movie. I mean, I don't have enough time to explain it to you here. But I did write it out in the album liner notes.
Oh,
and
nice.
It's really obvious that this horse is...
This is of your own imagination?
Yeah. It just... I don't know. Like, sometimes this happens, and this horse is the only cartoon character in the scene that looks weird. Every other cartoon looks to scale.
Okay.
So the cowboys that are chasing him look like real dirty, you know, scoundrels, and all the other horses look like horses, but this guy looks kind of like a really crazy, distorted pokey.
Okay.
You know, meets, you know, whatever. And he's buck teeth, and he has no idea he's being tracked and shot at. Meanwhile, he's just knocking everything over. He's really clumsy, but there's a, you know, he's got this real powerful force about him. Even though he's a complete, you know, fool, he's going to prevail, you know. So
what a perfect way to demonstrate that truly for you with writing these songs, it's not just being pulled out of thin air. It's like in your mind, a story is being told.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you prefaced it with that, because now the listener can try to conjure up that image and see if it works for them. Folks, you're listening to Now We're Talking, and pronounce it for me one more time.
Ferris Caballus.
Ferris Caballus. It's better when Chris pronounces it. Enjoy. Yes, folks, we are listening to Chris's music here at CITR. We're just talking about how freedom rules, because we're having these conversations while we're listening to the music. We're talking about what it means to be independent. There's challenges that go along with putting together this big tour you're on, and obviously doing it alone and investing the money. But isn't it nice to be making a living, man, writing the music you want to write, not being bound by what the music's supposed to be? It's connecting with people. It's a beautiful thing, you know, and maybe it's going to scale up over time, or maybe it'll be at this scale, but it's enough for you to live your life.
Yeah, I'm taking a big gamble over the last 2 years with my resources. You know, when I go on tour, some shows I make enough to pay for getting there, and others I outright lose money. I've sold all the useless pieces of equipment that I don't use to get this far.
Right.
Guitars
to streamline operations.
Really limited now.
Yeah.
You know, and when I'm home, my day job, so to speak, is guitar teacher, and I have the greatest students in the world. They're so supportive. They want me to get out there and play. And it provides me an opportunity to make a living as a musician doing what I love.
Yeah.
So that I don't have that pressure on my art to pay the bills, so to speak. And
yeah,
when it makes some money, that's great. It just goes right back into guitar strings or something. You know,
it's reinvesting
it's
in the process.
It's such a losing venture. Anyone who is really into economics would just...
Especially in Canada.
Yeah.
Such a large country.
Oh, yeah. It's just a, you know... But
hopefully
nobody's making me do it, and I love it. And I don't... You know, I'm in a position in my life right now where I can afford to take these risks, and I don't have any expectation that it's going to lead to anything bigger. It's just something I want to do. It's like traveling, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't go to Thailand because I thought I was going to be... You know, it's going to turn me into the king of Thailand or something. I just went there to enjoy life and to experience a different culture.
Yeah, so and to cast a wide net in terms of experiencing things and people and places. And I have a really good feeling about your music and the wide net that you're casting. Not just in terms of sharing it digitally, but sharing it face-to-face. I think that the music that you've written and that you play, especially we describe some of these intimate settings, I think it's going to mean a lot to people. And I think that the investment you're making with your time and your heart, as well as the money, it's obvious to me that it means enough to people. It is going to pay off.
Well,
so
thanks,
I'm
Jeff.
Glad that you're doing that, because it's one thing to do a BC tour. It's another thing to go Canada-wide, man, and you're doing it for the second
time.
We're almost out of time for this show, but let's quickly acknowledge the kickoff, I think, is May 11th, Thursday, May 11th.
That's right.
In North Van at that studio you mentioned before.
Yeah, at Blue Dog Guitars.
Where you found that beautiful guitar.
That's right.
And you're going to play, and tickets are available in advance for $25. People
can
go to their website probably to buy these tickets.
Yeah, they can go directly through Blue Dog. It's a very intimate, I purposely wanted... I love playing there. It's such a great vibe, and a small room that can only hold about 60 people.
Nice.
Where I'm also bringing an amazing musician out from Philadelphia, Trevor Gordon Hall, one of my favorites. So it's a real honor to have him coming up. And my good friend Guy David McDonald is also my touring partner for this journey, and he does an incredible, I mean, I call it Canadiana Americana. It's singer-songwriter, you know, Stomp Tom Connors meets Hank Williams with some kick-ass low bass vocals. It's a really neat show. It's going to be a little bit of everything on an acoustic guitar.
Nice.
We're hoping to get some ensemble stuff together as well. There's a limited time. You know, Guy's on tour right now. Trevor's on tour in Poland. I'm leaving on tour on Wednesday with my metal band, West of Hell. So there's not a lot of time to get us together, but we're hoping by that first show we'll have some ensemble stuff we can put together for people too.
Sounds like it'll be a great kickoff to a great tour. I'm glad that you're doing it here in Vancouver, so that listener, if you've been listening to the music thinking, what the hell is he doing? How is he making those sounds with his two hands filling it out like that? You can watch the videos if you want, but you can go and see it live in the flesh, because this kind of music, you want to experience it live. You want to be in that room.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully if people are listening and they're thinking about it, that's their chance. And if they're listening from across the country, they can go to Chris's website and figure out where he's playing, because it's probably somewhere near you. I'm Jeff Bryant. Thanks for listening to Now We're Talking. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Jeff.
It's been a real pleasure.
Yeah, and thanks to everyone who's listening, and hope you enjoyed the music.
Yeah, I hope we get to do this again sometime, man, and I'll be interested to hear about the tour. And I'm going to be at that show, because I can't wait. I've never had the chance to see this.
Right on.
So I'm going to be there, man.
That'd be great.
Okay, guys, enjoy. Take care.